Bill McKibben on action and strategies for saving the planet.
12% of Americans said they were willing to commit civil disobedience to stop climate change. If that's even close to true, then we have a good chance in this fight.
That's News and Public Affairs Day this Friday from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. here on KBOO Community Radio.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing and Full Circle Resale. Full Circle accepts like-new natural fiber clothing, jewelry, and accessories for consignment or store credit. Gazelle and Full Circle Resale are both located at the corner of Northeast 41st and Fremont, and on the web at GazelleNaturalFiberClothing.com or FullCircleResalePortland.com.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Clinton Street Theater, featuring independent and revival films, the Rocky Horror Picture Show every Saturday at midnight, as well as the monthly KBOO Movie Night. The Clinton Street Theater is located at the corner of Southeast Clinton and 26th in Portland. Schedule and information at 503-238-5588 or cstpdx.com.
It is 8:03, and you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving, and today, carbon democracy, political power in the age of oil. Our awesome guest is Timothy Mitchell. Timothy, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Lisa. It's great to be here.
It is great to be here, and I really wish that we had something wonderful and fuzzy and warm to talk about. This book, Carbon Democracy, is really resonating, Timothy, in Portland, Oregon right now, because last week, Multnomah County's Health Department, that's where we live, they rolled out for the first time in our history what people should do in dealing with the effects of climate change in our local community. And they rolled out a 10-point plan for, you know, get an air conditioner for all the old people, track the old people, because we're going to be having massive heat waves. And it rocked my world, Timothy. And that's, in a way, kind of part of why this issue resonates so much. But the other part, Timothy Mitchell, is the impact that coal, oil, and fuel have had on our government systems. So, Timothy, we've seen you in the media the past couple weeks, so talk a little bit about carbon democracy. Why did you write this book?
I wrote the book initially following the invasion of Iraq by the U.S. in 2003, when everybody was starting to say, what is this problem with oil and democracy? Why do oil-producing states in the Middle East seem to have such a problem with democracy? And I didn't think the way that question was discussed made much sense, because it seemed to me we all had a problem with oil and democracy in the kinds of ways you've just described, where a local community is being told that the way to address the kinds of problems that arise from our use of oil is to buy more air conditioners. The inability to tackle the larger questions of the risk of catastrophic climate collapse seemed to suggest that oil, that the burning of fossil fuels in general is producing a set of challenges, not just for people living in the Middle East, but for people living here. So I wanted to understand what was the relationship between the oil-producing countries and the oil-using countries.
And this issue for us right now today, we're all grappling with the federal government shutdown, and we could talk about that a little bit as well. But one of the issues that you bring up in this book is that, you know, again, that premise that countries that have an oil reserve or that have extractive industries, that's actually more of a curse than a blessing. But one of the things you're looking at is that the fuels industry, the extractive industries, they actually have, you could argue that they have a negative impact on virtually every country. Am I misunderstanding that?
Well, the interesting thing, and the way I started the story of carbon democracy, was to think about the difference between oil on the one hand and coal on the other, the two main carbon fuels. Of course, they both do equal damage to the climate, but the interesting thing, thinking back to the history of coal and to the rise of coal in the Industrial Revolution, and particularly by the end of the 19th century, is that coal actually helped make countries much more democratic. If you look at the period of the emergence of mass democracies, where not just a small elite, but everybody gets the vote, and where people use that vote to start demanding a whole set of improvements in collective life. It's where you get the introduction of the first retirement pensions and forms of health insurance and accident and other insurance and the eight-hour day and all kinds of other basic improvements in collective life that were so important to shaping what democracy became 100 years ago. That was thanks to coal in a quite specific way, not just because coal made industrial revolutions possible, but in the specific way that with the rise of coal, and as coal replaced earlier forms of renewable energy, it had one beneficial effect, which was that in making countries dependent on a single source of energy, it made them vulnerable. It made them vulnerable to what became the general strike. Because coal miners, with their allies in the railroads and the docks who moved this single source of energy, were powerful enough to actually threaten to shut down a country's economy. And they did that on behalf of a whole set of collective demands around working conditions, living conditions, and forms of basic security. So it's kind of interesting that one fossil fuel seemed to make possible the rise of mass democracy and enormous improvements in collective life, whereas a dependence now on a second fossil fuel seems to threaten the forms of collective life that we developed over the last century.
And I want to talk about that a little bit in a few minutes. We are about to take a trip to the Palace of Pledge in about 1 minute or so. And this is Lisa Loving. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. This issue, I'm putting this out, carbon democracy, this issue of the fuel. I know that we talk about a lot of issues on this show, but this one underpins so much. I feel so strongly about it, and I want to get into that later in the hour. But look, we're here, we're volunteers, we're here every week, week in and week out, volunteering our time to educate you listeners, because we care about you, you know? We're not getting golden eggs in our bags and taking them to the bank or anything like that. But now we're going to take the time to pass the hat and give you the opportunity to invest in our radio station, because this is an investment, just like BP has invested in dictatorships all over the world. We're asking you to counteract that and invest in this radio station. So we're going to go talk to Brian and Joe, my two awesome pals in the Palace of Pledge. Hey, Brian and Joe.
Hey.
Hey, Lisa.
Hey, hey. You know, it is the Palace of Pledge. It's a luxurious suite filled with gold and silver, all of it gotten from large capitalists. No, forget it.
In Joe's mind.
No, in my mind. Purely in my mind. The fact of the matter is, under these most humble circumstances, KBOO has thrived for 45 years. And it's done it because you out there have made a regular contribution to this station. Now, if you're missing out on that,
the number, What's the number?
Well, just wait. I'm building to it. 877-500-5266.
That's right. 877-500-5266. You know, it's a rare opportunity that a person can come to an organization and walk in the door and say, I want to learn radio. I want to learn how to do radio. And that's one thing that we can do here. We train people in the community to learn how to do radio. Me, Joe, Lisa, we all got trained here at the station how to do radio. And you can do that too, but we need financial support to make that happen for everyone else. So pitch in, be a part of the solution, not part of the problem.
Call now. Call right now. 1-877-500-5266.
There's also copies of the book, Carbon Democracy, for investment to the radio station.
Yes.
You know, I like to suggest that people give 1 hour's wage per month. And right now in Oregon, minimum wage is $8.95 an hour.
Ooh.
If you call 877-500-5266, we can, and you make that contribution like a minimum wage once a month. You can get this book. You could get a T-shirt instead. There's a number of things that you could do. We love it when people come in person. We're at 20 Southeast 8th Street in Portland, but you know we need people to make those phones ring.
That's right, Lisa. And the way they make the phone ring is to dial 1-877-500-5266. Before we forget, Joe, we need to thank Linton Feed.
Yes.
We love Linton Feed.
They
Linton Feed.
They upped their pledge, and we want you to up your pledge.
Are you kidding me? They did that.
Yes, isn't that fantastic?
It's in Linton, Oregon.
So yeah, and it's such a cool little place, and they upped their pledge. If you're a longtime member of KBOO at $40 or $60 a year, how about stepping it up a little bit? Maybe your work is going well for you. 1-877-500-5266. Whatever you can do to help KBOO keep thriving. You do it. You've done it for 45 years. Keep that going. 1-877-500-5266. On the internet, Joe.
On the internet, kboo.fm. But the main number, 1-877-500-5266. Make that call now.
And, you know, we love it when people come in person. We're at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, Oregon. It's a half block south of Burnside. We're going to pull the show back over to our friend Timothy Mitchell. We are live on the phone right now with Timothy Mitchell. His book is Carbon Democracy, Political Power in the Age of Oil. We're just talking with him about his analysis about the difference, the different impact of the coal industries versus the oil industries on governments around the world. And Timothy was talking about how coal, for whatever reason, seems to actually have been more instrumental in the development of democracy in certain places. And Timothy, it just makes me have to ask you then, what about fracking? What about that yucky fracked junk? It's kind of liquid. It's squeezed from rocks. What do you think about the impact that fracking is having on democracy?
Well, in general, the situation has changed since 100 years ago when the dependence on a single source of fuel made governments and made those who rule countries particularly vulnerable for a period of about 50 years. And I mean, what happened first, of course, was that they realized that, and they realized that this dependence on coal had caused an enormous upsurge in democracy in countries across the industrializing world. And what they did in response to that was they looked for another source of energy, and they turned to oil. Oil had been around for a while, but it was really only after 1945, after the Second World War, that you saw governments pushing the introduction of and consumption of oil on a large scale. And one of the reasons for doing that was to limit this rise of popular democracy in Western countries. So if you like, later on we know what happened was that business outsourced manufacturing to East Asia and Mexico and places in order to weaken the kinds of demands that labor was making in the industrialized countries. And if you like, that happened earlier with energy. Back in the 1940s and 50s, there was this decision to outsource the production of energy from Europe and from North America to places where workers would find it more difficult to organize and make political demands, and simply where the availability of these cheaper alternatives would weaken the kinds of democratic political demands people were made. So that's the situation we had in the second half of the 20th century. And it was not just that oil came from places where democratic struggles were difficult, but that actually worked to weaken democratic struggles that have been based on vulnerabilities around energy, even in this country. Fracking is an interesting story because that picture of half a century of being able to get cheap oil from the Middle East and places like that is coming to an end. Of course, there's still plenty of oil left, but it's been proven very hard to find more of it, which is a good thing in terms of climate and the dangers and the damage that oil does to the climate, but has also, of course, vastly increased the price of oil, particularly over the last decade, in 2006, 7, 8, when the price of oil quadrupled. That quadrupling reflects the fact that the cheap oil is no longer being found at a steady rate. And one of the consequences was that dirty, expensive oil, which has been known about for a long time, shale oil, could be produced through this procedure known as fracking. There's nothing particularly new about it. It's just the form of energy has become so expensive that it's now possible to go and drill for oil in rock formations that are so tight that you actually have to sort of go down there and carry out these little explosions and break the rock apart to find a way for the oil to flow. Nobody bothered to do this in the past because it was so expensive, and part of the expense is the enormous amount of water it requires to carry out the procedure, and the consequences of that, the environmental consequences, which are very serious. But rather than think about alternatives to oil, alternatives to gas, that's the direction the industry is taking in response to reaching this period where the cheap conventional sources of oil are more and more difficult to find.
It's like eating carp when the trout is gone.
Exactly. It's the same thing as the fish, yeah.
I have to say, and I'm going to jump into this before we give people another opportunity to invest in this radio station, but earlier this year, I traveled to Azerbaijan, to this town called Baku in Azerbaijan, where there was a U.S.-Azerbaijan friendship convention, and basically it was a petrochemical convention. And Timothy, it's like there were, I think, 14 different oil fuel multinationals represented there. It was sponsored by British Petroleum, BP, and SOCOR, the state oil company of Azerbaijan. And one of the things, one of the many, 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 many scary things that I learned there was that every country on earth with any kind of shale deposit right now thinks that they're going to, they're all trying to figure out how to get oil out of it, whether they know how to or not.
Right. And it's not solving the problems we face, and the problems we face with oil are not that the price has gone up so much. It's that we're still dependent on it in all kinds of ways, even though burning it is frying the planet. So the turn to fracking is not in any way a solution. It's not a solution because it's doing nothing. In fact, it's worsening problems of climate change. It's also not a solution because there is an enormous amount of hype attached to fracking. Because the price made it possible to open up these new reserves, which had been known about for a long time but were extraordinarily expensive, it produced this image of a great new oil boom. And indeed, in places where oil can be produced from these sources, there is more oil coming out, but it's not a long-term solution, certainly not one in terms of the climate, but it's not even one in terms of the actual availability of the energy. There's just a very large amount of hype about that wants to attract investment into it, because, of course, the oil industry, like other large industries, is very much driven by the financial interests that look to it as a way to reproduce.
Right, capital. Timothy, it's like, so when we say that the fracked oil is not a solution, actually we're asking ourselves different questions than the oil industry is asking. The oil industry is asking, of course, it's asking the question, how can we continue to maximize our profits, right? So for them, it is something like a solution. But I'm going to get ready right now, and we're going to go back to Brian and Joe. This is the Palace of Pledge, the number to call, 1-877-500-5266. I like to think of KABU and this kind of programming as the antidote to despair. So people that woke up and turned on the news this morning and they felt completely discouraged by the federal shutdown, global climate change, you know, Multnomah County Health Department. Look, there is an antidote to despair, and that's investing in a community that you're part of. Right, Joe and Brian?
That's absolutely right. In fact, you know, for 45 years, KBOO has been a leading force for progressive activity and for the oddities that make this city so interesting. If you want to see us continue, and we assume you are interested in that because here you are listening to us, if you want to see Lisa continue on, if you want to hear great information from really good and knowledgeable sources, if you want the best in music, you owe it to yourself to make a donation right now to KBOO. 1-877-500-5266.
You know, Joe, not only do we get support from our listeners who become members by calling 1-877-500-5266, but we get support from local restaurants. So let me take this opportunity to thank Jam Cafe at 2239 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard, Patisco at 1411 Northeast Broadway, and Cabazon at 5200 Northeast Sacramento Street for providing food today for our volunteers to help you out there, to help us actually ask you to call 1-877-500-5266. If you're listening online, www.kbu.fm. Now, you know, Joe, there are a lot of people that listen around the world and around the country even that don't have a community radio station locally based to them. So they tune into KBU because they realize the value of community radio.
Absolutely.
And if you're one of those people listening online right now at www.kbu.fm, go at the top of the homepage. There is a Donate Today or Donate Now jar. Click on that and help contribute to KBOO to keep us going for another 45 years.
Wait, yes. A minute. I feel like I'm hearing forks on plates. And that tells me this is a good time for people to come in person.
Ooh.
To 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. I personally, you know, there's coffee on the burner in there. There's no doubt food there in the back room. We love to share. They have the lava light, the orange lava lights going. I've got my Aunt Shirley's Lucky Vegas charm bracelet.
Nice.
Now all we need is you. Right?
Yep, listeners,
that's all we need.
That's
is
what we
you.
Need. So show up, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. If you show up in person, you make a contribution or you give us a call at 1-877-500-5266. You can also sign up to be a volunteer and you can learn how to do you could learn how to do producing shows, or you can learn how to be, you know, the person at the front desk. It's like there's so many people that contribute here and it is a community, and that's what we're doing. You know, if you don't make a contribution, I'm not going to stop doing this show. What we're trying to let you know, listener, is that this is a beautiful thing and you should be part of it. You should invest in it. It actually changes your immediate town. It changes the world. I'm putting that out. KBOO has an impact on this town, but it does something for you too. So 1-877-500-5266, or come in person, get some coffee. I know there's Voodoo Donuts in there. We're at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. Come in and sign up to be a volunteer while you're here.
Hey, Lisa, you know what? If people want to get a copy of the book Carbon Democracy by Timothy Mitchell, your guest this morning, and thank you to Timothy for donating this book. It's fantastic. For $5 a month, you can get a copy of Carbon Democracy by Timothy Mitchell. You can actually get this book, you can read it and give it to a friend. What are you talking about? Give them this book, they can read what's happening in the world with democracy and the oil industry. It's a fantastic read. You need to get it for yourself and then give it to a friend. $60 minimum pledge, $5 a month. What about $10 a month? 1-877-500-5266.
Yeah, let's just repeat that. 1-877-500-5266.
You know, the other thing is that when you do make that call, and we just gave you the number, you make a contribution and we give you a gift right then if you want. We'll give you the book, Carbon Democracy. $5 a month, that's less than a half rack of PBR. Come on, man. Step up. I'm putting that out.
You call
877-500-5266. You make a contribution to the radio station. You get a gift right then, but you get a little membership card in the mail that also entitles you to discounts all over Cascadia, including to Linton Feed and Seed that we were just praising earlier. All these businesses are part of our community. You're part of it too. We just need you to come and join us, join arms with us, put a little cash on the table. We'll give you a gift now and you'll get discounts all year long.
And if you just want to do it on the internet, kboo.fm.
Totally do it on the internet.
Yeah, I mean that you don't even have, if you don't feel like talking to a single person this morning, you're going to be silent the whole day. You can go online www.kboo.fm, do it there without speaking to a single person. You can be that isolated. But you're not isolated because you're part of KBOO. We're part of you, you're part of us. 45 years now. Call us 1-877-500-5266. Joe, Lisa and I are all volunteering our time. Why? Because we love KABU. We love bringing you information, news, public affairs, and music, the best you'll find anywhere in the world.
Brian, I do it because I want to make the world a better place.
Well,
and I
yes.
think we do it. I think we do it here every day.
We do. And if you are a listener to this station and are not yet a member or a member that has had your membership lapse, you can renew or become a new member or up your pledge a little bit, 1-877-500-5266.
Yes, it's really important to understand the station is powerful, it's better, it's growing all the time. Things are really good here right now.
Big resurgence in involvement.
Oh, so absolutely.
Give us that call, and we're going to come back to the show, 877-500-5266. I also want to say, coming up this morning on KABU at 9, here our special three-hour program on the politics of austerity. A dangerous and deadly policy. We'll hear interviews with Mark Blythe, author of Austerity, The History of a Dangerous Idea, Robert Kuttner, author of Debtor's Prison, The Politics of Austerity versus Possibility, Sanjay Basu, co-author of The Body Economic, Why Austerity Kills, and Ellen Brown, author of The Public Bank Solution, From Austerity to Prosperity. That's coming up at 9. But this right now is Wednesday Talk Radio. We bring Progressive Talk Radio to you every week, 5 days a week, every weekday. And you know what? Another language is on the weekend, which is awesome here at KABU Community Radio. We are live in this. We're live on the phone with Timothy Mitchell. His newest book is Carbon Democracy: Political Power in the Age of Oil. And Timothy, now I've heard you on Democracy Now! The past week. I've seen you popping up in a number of stories. I want to ask you a different kind of question. What kind of interviews have you been doing the past few weeks with this information, this book that you have? It's a history book, really. How are people folding your analysis into the activism people are doing right now? Do you have an insight on that?
Well, I think there's a lot of people, activists and others, enormously concerned about what's happening with climate and what's happening around oil and the energy industry in this country. And so the interviews I've been doing have often been together with those involved politically in these kinds of issues, campaigning, whether about the building of oil pipelines, people involved in the opposition to the Keystone XL pipeline, people involved in issues of climate change, people involved in trying to bring attention to a divestment campaign that's being organized on university campuses around the country, calling on universities and other institutions to divest from funds in oil companies and in fossil fuel companies. So although I'm a historian who writes from the perspective across the whole of the last 100 years to try and think about how we got into the situation we're in, I think the implications of my book and is very much for the politics of the present as well.
You know, there's something that I have to dip into this book, Carbon Democracy, Political Power in the Age of Oil. As we said, it's a pretty much a sweeping history of coal industry, oil industry, and how and the impact that they've had on government. Now, there's just a story that I've loved for years, and when I say I love it, I'm being really ironic. When the Taliban guys went to Texas, and you have this chapter called McJihad. I mean, to me, this goes right to the heart of the point of how these fuel industries, they sort of are who controls the U.S. government. I'm just putting that out. That's just my personal feeling about it. But Mr. Mitchell, talk a little bit about the chapter McJihad. What is that about? Tell the story.
Well, McJihad is a word I made up out of the notion of global capitalism on the one hand, which some people have referred to as McWorld, the idea that McDonald's and similar kinds of companies spread around the world and bring their particular form of consumerism and to the whole world. And people started saying, talking about this thing called globalization, where this particular form of consumer capitalism was spreading, and seeing places like the Middle East as somehow rebelling against it through this thing called jihad. And there was actually a book written called McWorld versus Jihad, an understanding that was the thinking of world politics in those terms. And that didn't seem to me to make any sense at all, because if you go back and look at the history of particular forms of fundamentalist Islam, of very conservative forms of Islam in the Middle East, those have actually been, if anything, the allies of the oil firms and of the American government in the region. I mean, the clearest example of that is Saudi Arabia, one of the most conservative states in the region, and also one of the ones most closely aligned with the U.S. and the largest oil producer in the country. The fossil fuel industry, the oil industry, global capitalism in that particular form, allied with a government that depended on extraordinarily conservative interpretations of Islam to buttress its own authority and power and to defeat the oil workers and others who back in the 1950s and 60s were carrying out strikes, protests, trying to demand not just labor rights, but a constitution for the country, an end to American intervention in the country, and so on. So I wanted to bring out that relationship between very conservative political forces in the Middle East and the history of oil production and oil exploration. One of the strange twists, as you mentioned, was when the Taliban first came to power in Afghanistan, they were actually invited to Texas to meet with the Bushes. And
there's pictures and there were articles, and it's funny. I'm sorry, it's funny.
Yeah.
Sad.
Well, and there was a particular reason for that, and it actually goes to that region of the world you were just mentioning, the Caspian region and Central Asia, where there was talk of hundreds of billions of barrels of oil that were going to be produced there and pipelines that were going to be built to take that oil, whether down to the Gulf or across to towards India and the markets in Asia, and Afghanistan was going to be the route of one of these pipelines. Of course, it turned out, as usual, that the rumors of all these hundreds of billions of barrels of oil were vastly overblown, and although that there is a oil industry that continues to produce oil in the Caspian region, it's on a much, much smaller scale. But the oil companies need that kind of hype as well, because anytime they want to build one of these pipelines, they need enormous amounts of government support, of subsidized loans, of loans from international institutions like the World Bank to help them pay for it. And so they we are told a story about how there are vast new sources of oil that are going to save us and keep the current system going, rather than, of course, the better idea that we find ways of moving beyond the use of fossil fuels.
I remember when I was young, the first fuel crisis in the early 70s, and the message that I swear it was the Nixon administration, maybe I'm misremembering, put out was use less energy. And that's, I have not even heard President Barack Obama say that, although maybe he did say it and I missed it. But it's like the whole concept of use less energy. It's to me in this more modern age, it looks as if the powers that be somehow are studiously avoiding saying that. And I remember public service announcements on television and on the radio saying that, you know, you don't have to have the government tell you what to say when you know what is needed. Anyway, this is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. We're on the phone with Timothy Mitchell. His newest book is Carbon Democracy. Political Power in the Age of Oil. We're offering that book as a gift for you if you join KBOO, and we will go back after a while to our pals in the Palace of Pledge and talk about how you can invest in this radio station. But the thing that really strikes me is when it comes to this issue of fuel and it comes to this issue of global warming, it's happening now. We're already watching it. It's happening right in front of us. Rarely is there an issue that is more connecting international politics with our local neighborhoods. I just think that this is, rarely is there an issue that is that clear cut. And yet somehow most of the people in our country are not getting that memo. And I don't know if it's because people don't want to hear it, if it's inconvenient, or if people are supposed to get this information handed to them on a silver platter. I mean, Timothy Mitchell, can you talk a little bit about that? I mean, what about when do the people of a country basically kind of take control? And I don't know if it's not a coal field, if it's not a coal democracy, when do we basically start telling people how it's going to be? Am I asking that question right?
I think it's, it can be useful to think back 100 years ago and understand how mass democratic movements emerge, but not because we're living in the same kind of world, but to think what were the tactics, what worked. And as I said before, the thing that happened with coal is that a particular vulnerability appeared. Countries that were dependent on a single source of energy and became vulnerable to forms of protest around the supply of that energy because it moved along very narrow networks, rail lines, docks, and so on that could be easily interrupted. We're not living in that age. anymore, and so we can't rely on that particular form of organization and protest. But we are living in an age where there are other kinds of vulnerabilities around fossil fuels. And it's important to think about what those vulnerabilities are. And the people who are vulnerable are the big fossil fuel companies, the oil companies and the coal companies, because they're not there because they like oil and they want to produce more oil or produce more coal. They are there because they have millions and millions of dollars invested in their companies, in their share prices, and that money has to be turned into more money. And to turn it into more money, they have to produce oil and they have to produce coal, and that is enormously profitable to them. And but it's at the same time a source of vulnerability, because if they can't keep doing it, if they can't keep making money out of that, they're going to have to go elsewhere and look for some other way. And the question is, how do you take advantage of that vulnerability, of their own dependence on producing vast amounts of fossil fuel, in order to make their own money? And we've got to sort of start thinking of oil companies not only as enormously powerful as they are, but also vulnerable to a change in the way we think about energy, a change in the way we think about oil, a change in the way we think about the way the fossil fuels are leading to such catastrophic consequences for the climate and for the possibilities of collective life.
Timothy Mitchell, I love you. You just said that the oil and gas companies are vulnerable. I need to hear that more. You know, when I was at this trip in Azerbaijan, and it was in late May, it was the most depressing thing I've ever seen in my whole entire life, because it's a dictatorship, right? And they didn't know. I don't think that the people that put this on, there were 300 lawmakers from around the country and members of Congress. There was George Friedman, the guy that started Strat4. There was the ambassador to Azerbaijan. There were Paul Wolfowitz was there. When I looked around, I just felt like this is why so many soldiers from Iraq are killing themselves, because it looks like the bad guys have won. It really does. I'm sorry to say that. When they control the entire debate, right, as far as anyone else knows, and these lawmakers, state lawmakers from around the country, they don't know anything. They don't. They really don't. I'm putting that out. We in Oregon have some of the most wonderful and smart ones around. But I was talking with this one lawmaker from Washington State who was saying, you know, it's all about the computer viruses, because once you breed that computer virus, I don't even know what she said after that. So that's the level of leadership we're talking about.
Oh dear.
But it is an oh dear. But I, you know, Timothy, what we're seeing in our local community now is with 350.org, the climate change activists are taking hold. They're trying to take that ruminant by the appendages and move it around. But I need to hear more about how the gas companies are vulnerable, Mr. Mitchell. Tell me more about it.
Well, I think 350.org and organizations like that are trying to work exactly at that kind of level, because they realize that what these companies depend on is the flow of investment funds into them and their ability to find more sources of oil, which tend to be more polluting, more dangerous. They now have to go to places like offshore, off the north coast of Alaska, and deep off into the Gulf, and produce oil where it's several miles beneath the ocean floor, in extraordinarily dangerous and difficult situations. They have to do that not because we actually need the oil, because we have all kinds of alternatives to increasing use of oil, but because they need to reproduce the profits for their investors and their owners. That makes them vulnerable. Unfortunately, so far, the particular risks have been borne mostly by others, the communities on the Gulf who suffered when there was a massive oil spill in the Gulf, the Deepwater Horizon disaster, or the communities around the Arctic who will suffer with the ecological disasters that happen there, as they will with the extraordinary difficulties of drilling for oil in the conditions of the Arctic. We're the ones who are made vulnerable, both at the level of the particular ecological catastrophes and the larger ecological crisis of climate change. But we can turn that around once we begin to realize that they are taking these extraordinary risks, and they are producing this increasingly expensive energy because they depend on it to keep making their own money. And I think it's possible to turn that around and to think differently about that. We think about banks following the 2008 financial crisis a little differently than we used to. We see the problems of the extraordinary risky forms of speculation that banks and investment firms became involved in.
Absolutely speculation. Here, Timothy, I have to grab the microphone, and we need to go back to Brian and Joe, because what we're doing is we're making sure that this radio station, KBOO Community Radio, based in Portland, Oregon, has the resources to continue our operations and try to continue to counteract this corporate sector that's actually the dog that's shaking the tail that's wagging the dog. 877-500-5266. How are we doing, Joe and Brian?
Oh, we're doing good. We're doing good. But we could do better. We could get more money from more people out there in the listening audience. We want to emphasize the service that KBOO provides. The best in music, the best in public affairs programming, like your show today, Lisa. And in order to have this station survive and thrive, it requires, yes, requires people in the listening audience, people out there just like you and you and you, to make a significant contribution to the station. And significant means, well, it depends on your income. It could be very little as $40. You know, it could be as much as $4 million. But right now, realistically, what you need to do is make a commitment to a gift to KBOO. 1-877-500-5266. I'll repeat that slowly. 1-877-500-5266.
And I want to thank Annalise from Milwaukee.
Yay!
Annalise from Renew. Thanks, Annalise. That's great. And Larry from Sheridan's Renewal. Thank you so much. Join Annalise and Larry for their recommitting to KBOO. Recommit or commit yourself to KBOO financially. We know you listen because you're listening right now to me, Joe, and Lisa, and her guest, Timothy Mitchell. If you're interested in what Lisa's talking about this morning, if you want to get a copy of this book, Carbon Democracy, you need to call right now, 1-877-500-5266, and say, I want a copy of Carbon Democracy. It's $5 a month, friends. That's pretty easy for most people. A lot of people can do that. If that's too rich for your blood, how about $40 for a month, a yearly subscription to KBOO.
It's not too rich for their blood. It's not.
Nothing
no.
Is.
You're listening and you've got the money. If you're holding a little paper cup of coffee in your hand, dude, y'all got the money now.
Mm-hmm.
And you invest it. You give us a call, 877-500-5266. You make an investment in this radio station and you know for a fact that KBOO is everybody's favorite weapon of mass instruction, right?
Oh, that's good, Lisa.
There.
That's good.
We're going
we like
out
that.
There. We're coming with Timothy Mitchell. We're waving Carbon Democracy around. How do you think we're going to turn over BP? You know what I'm saying?
It's stations
like this that make a difference. And you know that's true. You know, there's other public radio stations. There's a whole bunch of them. There's Oregon Public Broadcasting. There's All Classical 89.9. There's KMHD, the jazz station. We love them all, right?
Yes.
We love them all, and we support them all. But KBOO is the grassrootiest, right? This is the place that's closest to the ground. Support those roots. 877-500-5266. Get a copy of the book, Carbon Democracy, and go out there and educate the world, because we're sending out ripple effects, and I'm just putting that out. Okay, this is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. We're live on the phone with Timothy Mitchell. His newest book is Carbon Democracy. But Timothy, you wrote a super cool other book about Egypt. Timothy, talk about that book. Talk about your book about Egypt. What was it called? Colonizing Egypt.
I wrote two books about Egypt. The first one was called Colonizing Egypt, and the second one was called Rule of Experts, Egypt, Technopolitics, Modernity. The first one was really about Egypt in the colonial period and the 19th century, the kind of transformations that went into forming the power of a modern colonial state. One of the things I wanted to do was to get people to think about somewhere like Egypt as just as modern as somewhere like the eastern United States in the 19th century. It was just became modern in a different kind of way, and thinking about that and what that meant at many different levels, whether in terms of the economy, in terms of forms of politics, and to understand the long history of the relationship between these places. Even in the 1860s, the Egyptian army had American military officers serving in it. After the Civil War, many of them went out and served serve the Egyptian government. The U.S. and Egypt have been linked together for a long time in all kinds of complicated ways. The other book, the one called Rule of Experts, was really about the 20th century and about Egypt in particular, but also about the broader questions, particularly around the way in which America began to relate to countries of the Third World, of the Global South, after the Second World War, and how it conceived of that relationship as one of development, where one country was in the United States was the advanced developed country, and it would help what it saw as backward countries to modernize and become like it, which would both completely ignore that long history of the relationship between the two countries and between the West and the Middle East in general.
In the United States, I feel as though our relationship with history is a little bit weird, but we have a caller. Let's go to the phone lines. We have Marie on the phone. Marie, what do you think?
Yes, good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, Marie.
Okay, quick thing about the corruption of the oil company, because I live where there were oil fields in Texas. But before that, I love all three books, Carbon Democracy, Colonizing Egypt, Rule of Experts. I'm going to try to get all three.
Yay.
So my quick contribution is I live 10 years in Texas oil field area, and here's what's going on. They're promoting such crime and drug use with their oil field workers that there are terrible safety regulations. So the problem is that one way to go after this oil people is the heinous labor issue on their oil fields. And I worked in a hospital there in the Texas oil field, and it was known as one of the gunshot capitals of the world. There was terrible drug use, terrible safety regulations, and the whole oil field. And guess who was on it? Halliburton. Halliburton's one of their babies right there.
All right.
And
all
they
right,
don't
Marie.
Care about their workers.
Marie, thank you for calling. Marie is awesome. Thank you for calling. And we have one other caller. Let's go to that caller as well. We have Harry also. Harry, briefly, what's going on?
Yes, I'd like to ask your guest a question about climate change and his book, if it was mentioned in his book, his opinion. Well, the Earth naturally is going through a 30 glaciation or ice age every 30,000 years. The last ice age ended 12,000 years, which means we have 3,000 years of warming to go. Now that we have 350 parts per million in the air, I mean, if we don't shut down pretty soon, I mean, we still have 3,000 years of warming naturally by the Earth curving, you know, dipping.
All right, Harry, cool. So, Timothy, do you have an opinion about that? I mean, in all the research you've done, and we've got 2 minutes before we go talk with Joe and Brian again, but what is your take on that? I mean, we still have people that are denying that climate change is real.
Yeah, it's
I'm not saying Harry did.
Because the levels of concentration of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere are not things that happen over 8,000 or 10,000 years. We're seeing changes that haven't been seen in 800,000 years. And of course, it's not simply what we're seeing right now, because the problem of carbon change, of climate change, although we're seeing many effects of it now, is what's going to be happening in 30, 50, 100 years' time. Because as the carbon is put up into the atmosphere, it stays there. And even if you take measures now to do something about it, the carbon we've already put there is going to be accumulating and going to be having its effect over the next 50, 100 years and more. There is nothing like that in the last 8 or 10,000 years in terms of the kind of human-caused impact on the climate. And the consequences are not simply a natural pattern of warming and cooling that happens with the Earth. It's on the scale of the most extraordinary disasters that have happened over many, many hundreds of thousands and millions of years. And it's on that kind of level that we're threatening the possibility of human life. There's always going to be people who deny this or that aspect. The trouble is their voice gets amplified because companies like ExxonMobil pump funds into the crank scientists who believed in this kind of thing, as opposed to the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of serious scientists who produce the evidence on this.
Timothy Mitchell, that's a really depressing note, and yet we're going back to Brian and Joe and saying, Brian and Joe, how do people invest in this radio station to try to make a difference
so
when it comes to carbon democracy?
It's so easy, and it's so important. All you have to do is call 1-877-500-5266. Make a contribution. $5 a month out of your bank account. You'll never feel them. You'll never miss it. Or, you know, the minimum, $40. It's always welcome. And online, you don't even have to talk to anybody. KBOO.FM.
This is an amazing book. Timothy Mitchell, Lisa's guest this morning, has been talking about carbon democracy. You want to get a copy of this, don't you? I do. I need
especially
to renew my membership.
Especially if you're an activist, especially if you're agitating for social change, you're going to totally pull stuff out of here. It's awesome.
Yep. At $60 pledge, that you can do that all at once by credit card, or you can set up an EFT electronic funds transfer. $5 a month comes out of your checking account, your savings account, whatever it is. 1-877-500-5266 is the number to call, though. So you need to take that first step to the telephone right now, dear listener, and call 1-877-500-5266.
You know what? $60 is such an affordable price.
A mere bagatelle.
I want to suggest that people could do that as a gift membership to someone that they know cares about this issue of carbon democracy. I bet the people listening right now have Democratic Party friends that don't listen to KBOO all the time but are active about the coal issue. I'm putting that out. I bet you do. So give a gift membership to KBOO to someone that you care about and give them this book, Carbon Democracy. $5 a month, dude, that is so nothing.
1-877-500-5266.
Yeah, and online, KBOO.FM.
It's, you know, it's your responsibility as a listener to come and go from being a passive listener to an active participant financially with the station. It's really the right thing to do. So you need to do that for you and your community. We've been doing it 45 years here at KBOO with listener support. Our listeners become members. They become involved with the station. So when you contribute money, you actually, you know, it's kind of cliche to say, Lisa, but it sounds different when you're actually a financial participant in
KBOO. It's true. And if you give 1 hour's wage a month to KBOO and you call 877-500-5266 or come in person. I'm still hearing forks on plates, so I know there's still food back there.
Oh, yeah, there's food back there.
Southeast 8th Avenue. It sounds like breakfast food too, and I know there's donuts. When you make that contribution and you're doing it 1 hour's wage a month, I tell you what, I have a moment when I just go, God, this day is so awful. Hey, I'm going to work my KBOO hour right now. It really makes a difference. And, you know, also, if you are a KBOO listener and if you've ever heard of an awesome author like Timothy Mitchell before for the first time on KBOO, you know, there's so many authors, so many musicians that I heard about for the first time on KBOO. If you ever had an aha moment like that, you need to be making an investment. You need to be reaching for your wallet, reach for your phone, and giving us a call, 877-500-5266. But if you come in person, there's so many nice people here. That's why I love the membership drive. Usually it's early in the morning on a Wednesday. It's me, Steve, the dog, and Kathleen Stevenson in this building, right? Because one of the engineers of this show is a dog, in case you didn't know. Her name is Sky. She does quality control and the recycling. But, you know, if you come in person, you can meet everyone. And that's what I'm really suggesting. Just empty out your wallet on the table if you're already a member. 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. That's in Portland, Oregon.
If you're not able to stop by the station in person, though, the telephone is a readily available alternative at 1-877-500-5266.
Let's say it together.
1-877-500-5266.
Okay. 1-877-500-5266.
That was so deep, you guys. I just really want to say,
profound.
Brian and Joe rock. You know, we have a couple more minutes to ask you for money, but I want to brag a little bit about Brian and Joe. Brian and Joe are also volunteer programmers who are here. They do their own show. Joe, of course, does talk radio. Brian, talk about the show that you do when you're not here pitching for Wednesday Talk Radio.
Oh, gosh. Oh, shucks.
Oh, come on. Oh, tell us, Brian. Come
so
on.
I have a show on Tuesday mornings at 3 o'clock in the morning, every alternating Tuesday mornings. Yeah, I'm here live, friends, volunteering my time. at 3 in the morning, alternating Tuesdays. It's called the Vinyl Pajama Party. It's an eclectic mix of music and just weirdness, which is what I love about Middle of the Night Radio at KBOO.
It's really good. Because I was working really a graveyard shift at the grocery store years ago, and I couldn't live without some of this wild 2 a.m. stuff, saying.
Yeah, it's really cool. And you know what's really cool about KBOO's website at www.kboo.fm, Lisa and Joe, besides being able to contribute to KBOO right there in the Donate Today jar, you can actually go back and hear programs, assuming everything is aligned properly. You can actually go back for 2 weeks after and hear some of the music programs that you may have missed in the middle of the night.
You used to be able to do that, but now you can.
You can go back in time.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. 1-877-500-5266. 1-877-500-5266.
You give us a call. You get this book, Carbon Democracy, Political Power in the Age of Oil by Timothy Mitchell. You get that right now. And then you get your membership card in the mail, and it gives you discounts at all sorts of businesses all over Cascadia. There's licensed massage therapists. There's people that fix your computer. There's people that check your chimney. There's all sorts of awesome
chimney checker
businesses. Yes, he's actually a chimney sweep.
Nice.
Just like that musical with Mary Poppins. But anyway, we're going to slowly bring the show back as we're going to close out this show. We've got Timothy Mitchell on the phone. A few more minutes, and thank you to everyone that's called. You know, you can call even if we're not asking you to in that beautiful moment. 877-500-5266. Timothy Mitchell, we have you for a few more minutes. Carbon Democracy. Now, you're in the middle of a whole lot of information. Timothy Mitchell, he is a professor at the Department of Middle Eastern, South Asian, and African Studies at Columbia University. Timothy Mitchell, what should we be watching right now if we care about this issue of carbon democracy? What should we be watching? What should we be reading? What should we be paying attention to?
I think looking at what I've called the precarious, the vulnerable nature of the oil companies. I was saying before there was a remarkable thing after the 2008 financial crisis, where people began to see the financial industry, the banks, as not simply these beneficent people who were funding things for us, but as these speculators who were taking extraordinary risks with money that was not theirs in order to make their extraordinary profits. And I think we've got to come and see oil companies the same kind of things. They're financial operations that have enormous amounts of capital, and just as the banks tried to turn people's homes into things they could speculate in through second mortgages and through derivatives that repackaged mortgages and turned into these fancy financial speculations, the oil companies are doing the same thing. They're trying to make money through taking our environment, our collective world, speculating with it, turning it into a source of profit for themselves at ever greater sources, ever greater conditions of risk, and that's the risk of the forms of natural disaster, environmental disaster that we've seen in the Gulf and elsewhere. But it's also this speculating, this playing with the risk of global climate collapse. And we've got to start thinking of oil companies, energy companies in general, as playing the same kind of dangerous game with our collective future that the large banks were doing and would like to be doing again going forward. And in fact, they work together, because part of the hype over fracking, for example, is coming from organizations like Citibank that are the big investors in fracking. Not their own money, other people's money, but then they make the money out of the fees and the problems that result when the fracking companies go bust, as so many of them have, because it turns out to be so much hype or so much more difficult than the investment advisors suggested. So we've got to change the way we think about the nature of energy as a business.
Hey, and I want to thank you so much for being with us today, Timothy Mitchell.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. And that's it for our show. Thanks to our guest, Timothy Mitchell. He's the author of Carbon Democracy, Political Power in the Age of Oil. Get your copy by giving us a call, 877-500-5266. Special thanks to engineer Steve Nasser and Sky the Studio Dog, the best of the best. This show will be podcast on KBOO.fm. Grab that link and share it with your friends and family. I'm Lisa Loving. Follow me on Twitter for more news and information about the topics we discuss on this show. Theme music by the March 4th Marching Band. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for a special 3-hour program, The Politics of Austerity. Thanks for listening.
before you dig in the grave.
Come on, come on, people now.
You better dig the screw before you dig in the grave.
Hi, this is Per Fogring, host of Fight the Empire. Dmitry Orlov was born in the Soviet Union and witnessed its economic collapse. Now he lives in the United States and foresees one here. His recent book, The Five Stages of Collapse, will be a KABU membership drive thank you gift. That's Thursday, October 17th at 9:30 a.m. A conversation with Dmitry Orlov on KBOO, your radio station.
This Friday, tune in to KABU all day for News and Public Affairs Day. Speakers include Thomas Lindsay on local democracy, Kathleen Dean Moore on climate activism, Angela Davis on feminism and abolition, and Bill McKibben on action and strategies for saving the planet.
12% of Americans said they were willing to commit civil disobedience to stop climate change. If that's even close to true, then we have a good chance in this fight.
That's News and Public Affairs Day this Friday from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. here on KBOO Community Radio.
This is KBOO Portland, where the time is approximately 9:01 a.m. Coming up, our special three-hour program on the politics of austerity, a dangerous and deadly policy. We'll hear interviews with Mark Blythe, author of Austerity, the History of a Dangerous Idea, Robert Kuttner, author of Debtor's Prison, The Politics of Austerity versus Possibility, and Sanjay Basu, co-author of The Body Economic, Why Austerity Kills, and Ellen Brown, author of The Public Bank Solution, From Austerity to Prosperity. First up in our special this morning, Michelle Schroeder-Fletcher interviews Mark Blythe, author of Austerity, The History of a Dangerous Idea. Stay tuned.